What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to sensarena.com to check it all out.
This week on the Hockey IQ podcast, we bring on Michael Toplitzky. Mike is a good friend of mine from the Cleveland area. He's coached out there for quite some time now, and he's just got a wealth of knowledge and a great viewpoint on coaching, not only for the skills, but for the holistic player. So it's a lot of fun to see how his mindset has shifted through the years and how he's approached different situations. He came into what many would probably call a difficult situation on giving back to the local youth organization, even though he was coaching a high school team and had been for quite some time. And we really dive into that on this episode, and a lot of good points here. I'm really excited to share this episode with everyone. So let's get into it. On this episode of the Hockey IQ podcast, we bring on my good friend, Michael Toplitzky. Michael is a dang good coach. But had a very interesting situation when he was volunteering back into the youth ranks from being a high school coach. So excited to dive into that plus more. So, Mike, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe give a little bit of a coaching background and how you approach the game. And I guess I'd more focus on how you approach coaching the team, ensuring everyone's got a role and feels included, because you do come from a background of working in the schools.
Yep. So my my experience with hockey started, you know, obviously with playing youth hockey and playing high school hockey, and then kind of during my you know, getting my master's in education, I happened to find an opportunity to get into coaching at a local high school at kind of a one of the teams that's, you know, the focus of the program is going to be, you know, sustaining numbers, teaching development, you know, more so than, you know, competing for state championships. But absolutely fell in love with it. Worked in that assistant coaching position for 4 years, and then ended up taking over a local high school program in kind of that same area where the focus is really going to be on development and, you know, sustaining a program and kind of creating a culture where those three things are going to be more prevalent than, you know, going for state titles, still wanting to, you know, win championships and, you know, collect some tournament trophies, but where there's a bit different emphasis. So that's where the you know, where I kind of fall in the coaching tree. Philosophy of coaching is similar to, you know, how a lot of companies try to run their business. You fill the bus with good people, and then you figure out where they sit. You figure out how to put the right person in the right seat to get the bus moving in the right direction. So really strong emphasis in all the teams I've been with of making sure that everyone kind of understands their role, whether it's leading all the stats categories and, you know, all the way to developing skills in areas A, B, and C to be able to contribute more to the team, you know, down the road than immediate. I mean, it all depends on the situation, but that's kind of the road I took and the philosophy that I've kind of established there.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And even with your playing background, I think that you more than most understand the value of finding a role and figuring out a place on a team. I would say that you outshone your talents and scored a lot more goals because you hang around the net and you're just this feisty little nutcracker. So was your playing career and maybe not being the point getter really help you understand with a lot of these kids that are further back in the lineup or just, you know, trying to stay in that lineup or trying to get some ice time or increase their ice time, like truly understand on that personal level?
Yeah. So, I mean, unlike the hockey I know I've seen you play, I wasn't usually walking anybody. So I was usually the smallest guy on the ice and may not have had as much youth experience as other guys I was playing with. So I had to make up for it in 110% effort at all times, A, to show the coach that I belonged on the ice, and B, you know, to get to the quiet area behind the net or to get to the slot and, you know, do the hard work to get those ugly goals. It's been tough for me and, you know, it's tough for everyone at the high school level in particular to try to get the kids to understand that a snipe off the crossbar and in counts the same as, you know, a nasty, dirty goal off the fifth rebound where you're in the right position and you lower the bottom hand and bend your knees and put in a scrappy rebound. They all count the same. So I'll take 20 of those over five bar downs. I mean,
I feel like that's something that a lot of players struggle to understand. And even some parents would struggle to understand is, you know, my kid's so good. Well, coaching isn't always about putting the best good players out there, putting the good kids out there. It's about putting the right players out there for whatever the situation calls for. And most importantly, who's going to be the most effective. Like for me, when I watch any NHL game, you know, it's all about who's effective. Like you can be the flashiest player ever, but it doesn't matter unless you put that puck in the back of the net or you're driving the play forward or you're blocking a shot or doing something that's going to be effective for your team's performance and leading to winning. It's not all about how good you are, how skilled you are, but how much you contribute.
Yeah, I think you and I have discussed this in the past, a concept that I like, and it's, I don't know that a lot of coaches would love this because it's not a measurable analytic per se, but I'm a big fan of the net positive. So the best player on a high school team a lot of times has been the best player on their Bantam and Peewee and Squirt team. And, you know, may have had a lot of coaches that were dads of players on the teams who would say, we're going to win if we get the puck to Joe. Let's just keep getting it to Joe. Joe, you go coast to coast and do what you got to do. Well, if Joe can't pass and play within a system and Joe won't block shots or back check and Joe takes 8 penalty minutes a game, but scores 2 goals and you lose 6-2 every game, you know, Joe, is Joe bringing a net positive or is Joe just a really good, you know, standalone hockey player? You'll win a lot of games in Bantam that way, but you get to the high school level, especially at higher levels of high school play. And I'm sure, you know, it the college ranks that you've seen, flashiest best player on the ice can only do so much in a game, particularly if they're not on the ice because their coach can't trust them to not be in the box all game or, you know, they won't do the less flashy things.
A perfect example, I think, was rookie year, only 2 or 3 years in, is Ovechkin in a 1-goal game, was sitting on the bench because his team was leading. And I think he ended up playing maybe like 30 seconds out of the last 10 minutes of gameplay. I forget where I saw this, but there's something out there where his skill set at the time did not match up with what his team needed. And it was nothing personal, but he wasn't going to be seeing the ice there.
If I remember right, he wasn't on the ice the last shift of their cup clincher. It may have had to do with him taking, you know, minute and a half shift shortly before. But also, I mean, I love Ovi as much as anyone. He's one of the best scorers of all time. Not necessarily the most complete defensive player. So when you're protecting that 1-goal lead at the end, I mean, he can train through someone and throw him through the glass, but, you know, D in front of the net, he might not be who you want when you're trying to clinch the cup winner.
Well, I think a few times videos have come out of like, is it a broken controller or is it an Ovechkin back check? He's just got his hands on his hips and he's just gliding back, watching the play happen. It's not the video game where the controller disconnected. It was actually a real life situation and you're scratching your head. It makes a lot more sense of how a coach manages a bench and how you get that ice time. So he's going to probably break the all-time goal scoring record, but still there are moments in a game where he's just not going to see the ice. So it just goes to show, even if you're the best offensive player, or the best goal scorer in the game, there are moments where if you can't do what is, you know, what the job requires, you're just not going to get put out for that job. And effectively, as you and I know, coaches, you know, ice time is trust. You know, can we trust you to do what we expect you to do? Do we expect you to generate offense? Do we expect you to shut down? You know, what is that expectation? You know, and how do you as a coach manage that expectation with your players? Are you doing it up front? You know, how do you have those conversations? Because they're not always fun.
It's definitely not always fun to you know, particularly with a senior or a captain who, you know, they've garnered that trust, and then suddenly you're seeing bad habits, or you're seeing those sort of undesirables, maybe out of frustration, and having to have that conversation. I trust me, I didn't think when we were going to get on this call, I'd be picking apart Ovechkin's game or talking about things about Patrick Laine that frustrate me. But, you know, I watch every Jackets game, and it definitely bugs me to see at times, Laine try to take the puck wide around a defenseman or go through a defenseman, lose the puck, and instead of a stop and start, it's a curl back. I lost it. I'm not going for it. And that's, you know, that's a hard conversation to have with maybe your best player, you know, at the high school ranks, to say, hey, you're not doing everything we're asking for, and setting a pretty rough example for the younger guys. I gotta have you sit and watch a younger kid show that he wants it more. That can be a tough conversation to have at the youth level. You know, sometimes you know that conversation is going to result in a phone call with an angry parent later that day. You know, remember the Titans-esque, my kid's the best you've got, why are you benching my kid? You know, it's tough when that message may not be consistent from the coach to the, you know, what the parents are telling the kid later. But, you know, you got 20 kids, you don't just have one or two. So that's a conversation that has to happen.
Yeah, and I know when I have these types of conversations, like, you know, I can give you what you want, but is that fair for everyone else? You know, is giving one kid worth having the other 19 really upset? You know, like, at what point do you put the player over the team? Like, there are situations where you stick up for a player and you try to grow them as a person as well. And there are times for that, but a lot of times it's just understanding the importance of everyone else in the group and seeing a bigger picture than yourself.
That's 100%, you know, aligns with the experiences that I've had. I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more later when we dive into the specifics of the experience I had last year. But man, that was an even tougher conversation to have with kids, particularly seniors during the last year's COVID impacted season, where sometimes they weren't at school, they weren't getting to see their friends or their girlfriend, they weren't getting to go out and have fun like you would as a senior in high school, and then they come to hockey, something that's supposed to kind of provide that time away from kind of real life essentially, and then getting talked to by the coach about how they're not doing everything that's expected. I mean, it was kind of tough to put additional things and, you know, the negative side into the mind of a young person. Really took a lot of focus on my part of making sure that I wasn't coming across in like a personal attack, like separating the bad habit or bad tendency or something that I wasn't seeing from the player, from the kid. I remind myself that all the time that, I mean, an 18-year-old is a very young person. I try to think back, how well did I take criticism, even constructive criticism, as an 18-year-old? And then I think, all right, and you know, 18-year-old Mike, you haven't seen your friends and gone to school in 6 months. So those were tough conversations to have during really tough times, when sometimes I felt like the kids needed kind of a mentor or even someone to talk to even more than a hockey coach.
And that's a key thing you just brought up, the separation between the player and the person. You know, maybe there's some coaches that are not this way, but I've never met them. But, you know, all the coaches want the best for the players. You want the best for your kids. I want the best for mine. And it's a matter of, how do we do that? And it's not always, you know, sunshine and rainbows. Sometimes it's those hard conversations that help them grow. And you had a really nice player that had some good leadership. And I'd love to hear maybe some examples of that leadership that played for you at the high school level last year, is now at the University of Akron with the Zips Hockey Club. So maybe give us some examples of what that good leadership happens to look like, because, you know, there is that separation between player and person, and growing that person usually leads in growing that player as a leader and as a team member as well. And it's oh so important.
Yeah, the two things that I think I would speak to the most about that player, besides being a fantastic hockey player, like we've talked about, that's not necessarily enough to be a leader. You can't just be the, you know, maybe the best player on the team. Every single practice to this young man looked like game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Wanted to win every drill, seemed to really analyze why a shot didn't hit the net, or why he got poked, in a one-on-one or a 3-on-2 drill. You could really see a competitive edge that not everybody has, you know, at that age. In terms of, you know, game days, I mean, I can vividly remember several situations of this player talking to the team and saying, first things first, I need to give more. I didn't do what I needed to do, and that didn't set a good example, and maybe that let the rest of us think that we only need to push as hard as I'm pushing, and if that's the case, I need to push more. That has been rare to me. You know, almost a decade of being involved in coaching hockey, that's rare for a young person to call themselves out in front of their teammates, in front of their peers. But I mean, these sort of things, I can tell you, this player did not play for my high school their freshman and sophomore year. Came in their junior year, and the captain, like the leadership team of captains, came to me, you know, halfway through that year and said, hey, even though this kid hasn't been with us the last 2 years, we need him as a captain with us. Again, a rare thing for, you know, a couple young guys to say, it shouldn't be all about us. We need, and the team needs him as well. And that spoke volumes.
Extremely rare to call yourself out, but it's such a humbling experience. And think what that does to the other people in the room, right? Like, especially young folk, you know, they're most of them are trying to just survive out there. You know, get to the point where you're able to think beyond yourself, and raise those expectations for others to look inward and reflect and continue to grow. I think that's extremely powerful. So would like to put a cap on this for a little bit and get to your experience when there was a coaching need that was there to be filled, and you stepped into it, maybe reluctantly at first, but you probably grew a great appreciation for this team. And I'll let you explain the situation in your own words. And it was your experience. I know you and I had quite a few phone calls about it, but I think it's such an enlightening conversation, because this was maybe not the AAA level, and we're trying to, you know, go to the next level and continually, you know, pushing, but more of seeing that there's more than just the high level hockey. There's also maybe some lower level hockey, and the great fun and development personally, and as a player, and the confidence that can be grown from those types of situations. So I'll let you take it from there.
Well, yeah, it's funny you use the word reluctantly. I, 'cause it wasn't exactly reluctant situation to become involved, but I heard about a need for help with one of the Bantam teams, and I agreed to come help out, and I showed up to an early practice and was handed a clipboard and said, "Thank you so much for taking over as head coach of this team, with a roster and a schedule and everything." And I was there in front of a whole bunch of kids and parents, and just sort of happened. Really good group of kids, but a very unique situation. The top three or so players on this team, I think the team had 16 kids. The top three in terms of skill level, I know one's a starting goalie for a high school team right now as a freshman. The other two I could see them both being high level contributors and leaders on their teams starting their freshman years. As you kind of got down the level of skill development, there were several very new skaters, several Bantams who I don't think had ever considered the fact that they were going to start dealing with checking and what that would entail. And what I found out to also be several players who were playing because their parents had told them they had to do something, and they hadn't been engaging in a lot of social activity, or they only had one sort of thing they liked to do, and their parents kind of made them reach out more to figure out something else in terms of a social activity, and somehow ended up in full contact hockey, maybe a bit reluctantly. So definitely a bit of a challenge because, at the high school level, you sort of stop seeing, it's kind of like Little League baseball sort of thins out as you get towards high school in terms of kids who don't want to be there or who may not love what you're doing. You really kind of have to love going to the rink at all hours of the night and driving through the cold and getting hurt and getting hit and wearing $2,000 of armor while you're doing it. But this was a unique situation because there were several kids who needed that kind of higher level development, several who needed really early development skills, and a couple others who, for them, and again, it was during that COVID period of time, who needed fun in their life and needed this activity to be an escape from everything else that may have been going on. So it was like coaching three or four teams at once. There were a couple of great dads of players who I was coaching with, who had experience with hockey one of them had experience working with young people, but that was a shock at the beginning. And I know I called you a couple times and said, there's not a lot of hockey going on. It's a lot of kind of social emotional development that we're working on. And that was difficult. While I was also coaching a high school team at the same time, to go to one practice and really be going after it, and another practice, and kind of at times talking about what mindset and kind of mental space kids were coming to practice within, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And one of the early conversations that you and I had was your struggle to handle the fact that players were scared of contact. Like, they were basically passing the puck to the opponents They didn't get hit. And I know you also came – we'll attack that at one point, but maybe come with what your original mindset was going into it, and then maybe a few weeks later, a month or two later, how did your mindset evolve throughout the season? Again, coaching like two, three teams, having players that are scared to get hit. Maybe they're just out there and this might be their last year of hockey.
Well, I can tell you that at the beginning of that Bantam season, it was pretty difficult for me to kind of extrapolate what are we doing besides trying to develop our hockey, like our hockey skills specifically in our development. I think my mindset kind of at the beginning was, if you're here, you're here to play hockey, and I'm going to work with you to try to help you become a better hockey player. Relatively quickly realized through conversations with you and conversations with other coaches that have been mentors to me in the past, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink kind of thing, where if you don't have it in you to seek out the puck and seek out contact, and you're not thrilled about what it is that you're doing in the first place, striving towards that hockey development as the ultimate goal may not be realistic for some of the players. That's not to say, you know, half the team's working on high level development drills on one end of the ice, and you know, the other group are playing, you know, playing tag or sharks and minnows on the other side, just happy to be there. But the ultimate goal may have been slightly different. I do know that there are several players who, you know, who that was, not several. There were a couple of players who that did end up being the last year of hockey they played. I know one was a competitive gymnast. Another was, interestingly enough, a very successful competitive online gamer. And, you know, that's really where the passion fell. And I mean, if you're going to do something for hours and hours a week, you got to love it. You got to, you know, with hockey, you got to love contact. You got to love cold. You got to love, you know, intensity. And it's hard to not have a love for kind of all those aspects. But the one that really shook me was I kind of was left speechless seeing a couple kids take a puck, usually in the neutral zone, see someone from the other team coming and pass the puck to a player on the other team and then start skating backwards, like preparing themselves to play defense. That's an odd thing to see and then try to think about from a hockey perspective. Like, we're not even really approaching hockey skill and development at that point. That's sort of a mental block that we need to discuss and need to kind of game plan for. I'd assume that's not something you've seen much with Great Lakes hockey, Great Lakes Division hockey, or ACHA hockey from your end.
Not particularly. I mean, public schools and private schools, depending on where they are in the pyramid, are definitely night and day different on the types of conversations and the types of situations that you're handling. You know, a lot of my conversations were around higher level thinking. I mean, that's part of the podcast and the newsletter. But I've had plenty of people on where I think there's value in understanding the whole gamut of the types of players you're coming across, because while the hockey may be different, the motivations may be different, the people are the same. You know, like there's the humanity in us all that you can never get away from. But like, that's definitely a tough one. And I know that was definitely an interesting conversation that you and I had on the phone as you were basically beside yourself. Like, how can a player possibly put a tape to tape pass and then just start skating backwards on defense? Like, how is that going through their head as the best play?
I mean, it's pretty obvious to see when strategy leaves the mind quickly and fight or flight kicks in. And in that case, much, much stronger on the flight. One of the ways that I really attack that, and I'm a pretty active coach when I'm on the ice in practice, a lot of times I'm pretty involved in drills or pretty involved, you know, in the drill myself to be able to see, you know, if I want to see how forwards attack defensemen, I'm going to dive in as a defenseman and see kind of what that looks like. But, I mean, we started with it going back, you know, kind of old school, proper checking technique, proper technique for taking a hit, and then work towards angling, you know, angling, showing that the purpose of a hit isn't necessarily to remove a guy from his consciousness or remove him from his head. It's to remove the puck. You know, a gentle hip check as you get in front of someone and stick tap them and remove the puck from them accomplishes what you're trying to accomplish without, you know, putting lives in danger, I guess. But we started there. And one of the ways that I kind of tried to show, not just, you know, coach it, but show it, I was out there in full gear. If you're not going to hit each other, hit me. I'll show you that, you know, Coach T, you know, 5'5" Coach T with a bad hip out in full gear, you know, the gear protects you. And if you don't duck and you don't turn your back and you, you know, you're prepared and with a wide base to brace for a hit, that's when you're safest. And trying to, you know, kind of start from there, you know, I think that got a lot of the kids on the team kind of thinking, guys are coming at me to try to take the puck, not to hurt me or kill me. And now I'm prepared for what that looks like. And we started to see it slowly, but we started to see, you know, while not everyone was seeking out contact or trying to throw hits or trying to dive into corners and really initiate the contact, there wasn't so much a fear for it. It was sort of a you know, ancillary part of the game, not, you know, an all mind consuming, am I going to get hit when I'm out there? Am I going to get hit when I'm out there?
And there's nothing like the coach being in full pads. I usually do that for the last practice of the year. I'll let the kids, you know, have a run at Coach Revac a little bit. Yeah, that's fun for them. So as soon as you put those pads on, players usually want to hit the coach a little bit, you know, give a little bit and have a little bit of fun there. So I think that's awesome. So I'm curious, continuing on with that season, you know, what did the end, you know, obviously where you started was a tough place, but where did you end the season? You know, where was the team at? I'm assuming it was a much better spot than when, you know, you started with it.
Yeah. So during the kind of scrimmage and the, you know, preseason where you figure out what division you're going to be at and what level you're going to be at, won a couple, lost a couple, and then something kind of there was a kind of a flick of the switch. I think we had to travel to a game, and we scored the first goal or two, and then one of our kind of higher level kids got yard sailed like real quick into the game, 2 minutes, 3 minutes in, and there was like a flick of a switch where the entire team kind of lost their aggressive, you know, their aggression, their to get to the puck and to move the puck, and it was just kind of protect myself. And it took a while to get through that for a good chunk of the team, and it made for some rough hockey. There were some games of not having much puck possession because the goal was get rid of the puck and be away from the puck. But as that was sort of the roadblock, as we were able to get more comfortable with the concept of contact, our time of possession, based on the eye test, I mean, there's no one keeping that stat necessarily in Bantam hockey, but the eye test of, are we possessing the puck? Are we attempting to break out a clear breakout with a purpose, not, you know, a Murph dump just to try to avoid a hit? And we started to score goals and we started to win some games. I think down the stretch in the last, you know, four games, I think it was win-loss, or maybe the opposite, loss-win-loss-win. And we finished on a win, and, you know, hadn't won too many, you know, in a chunk of time. So you could kind of see confidence start to build when results started to show, not just of winning games, but of, you know, wow, I'm, you know, little Tommy. And when I, you know, occupy space in the slot, that's where the puck ends up. And, you know, I have the puck on my stick and I have an opportunity to score, or I score a goal, or, you know, someone tries to line me up and I get that wide stance and brace for the contact and they bounce off or they hit the ice and I don't. I mean, you, you don't necessarily always want to see smiles on the ice during gameplay, but I'd start to see them of, hey, look what I did. And that was, I mean, I keep going back to it, but I mean, when some kids that really needed a win during a really tough time of their childhood, or, you know, their kind of young adulthood, seeing it click for some of them was, I mean, a real eye opener for me, and kind of another angle at which to, through which to analyze, you know, am I successful in my coaching?
Yeah, I think that personally is massive. Like, am I leaving this team, these players, these people in a better spot than when I found them? Like, that's the ultimate. Like, the wins and losses, that's great, and that's like the byproduct. But what really matters is exactly what you talked about, is that process and seeing that confidence grow and giving them the tools, whether it be going from out of the lineup to in the lineup, or bottom of the lineup to middle of the lineup, and then from middle to top, or even just those top players, you know, like, they're competing against the best players on the other team. Like, they're competing to be the best player on the ice, bar none. So just taking the team, the players, to that next level, and especially the people, and giving them that confidence to go do stuff is just amazing. And I think you did a wonderful job with it. And it probably has a little bit to do with how you approach that situation as a teacher, going through those mental blocks, not working around it per se, but facing that. You know, that's something that anyone can take, is facing that head on, figuring out how to get comfortable, go through with that, and then press forward with a smile on your face.
Well, the tough part of that can be, I may have a smile on my face, and a young developing player who's starting to see some successes may have a smile on their face. But an aspect that really proved to be challenging, but I was able to kind of get better in tune with as the season went on, there's some pretty high, I mean, at the top of that team, there were some pretty high level players. And they at times were bored and frustrated and disengaged. I mean, I try to put myself in the shoes of maybe the kind of top point producer and kind of top skill guy on my team. I'm out here really trying to bust it the whole game, and a kid on my line just passed the puck to the other team so he wouldn't get hit. You know, this isn't the hockey I want to be playing. Or, you know, in practice, I really hope I'm going to be challenged. Like, there's not anyone else out here to challenge me. So at times, I mean, the creativity from the coaching staff actually had to at times include some of these higher level players competing with the coaches, or really competing with each other, because it's hard. I mean, if there's a team of 20 and 10 are at that high level and 10 are kind of in the more development level, you know, you can make 5-on-5 in intense skill development. You can make that work, but it's really hard to make 2-on-2 or 2-on-1 skill development, you know, a reality for an entire practice or an entire season. So it definitely took some creativity on our part to try to ask some of these higher level kids, hey, I really need your leadership to make this work. That's a lot to ask of a 13 or 14 year old kid. I need your help in showing what a hockey player looks like and how a hockey player practices.
Well, it's actually super powerful when I think about it, because you're now asking someone to give back. Best part about writing a newsletter is understanding, like, maybe I don't understand it as good as I thought I did in my head. Like, it sounds really good in my head and sounds really good when I talk, but then when I put it on paper, kind of an issue. And just having that ability to give back and think about, how do I teach this to someone else, or how do I show the way, whether that be with your high school and how that kid was calling out himself versus a kid trying to show the way to the players that struggle a little bit more. Like, that's super powerful learning experience for them, and actually helps them grow because now they understand these things better. I think what you went through was probably learning in dog years compared to most coaches that have an easier ride or have all the players that are very similar. I think that it's super valuable for coaches to get that experience where you've got a wide range. How do you engage that top kid? How do you engage that bottom kid? And what do you need to do? Do you need to handicap practices? Do you need to get coaches and extra coaches involved? Like, I think it's just a fascinating case study. And I'm curious to maybe start to wrap this up a little bit. Just, you know, what did you learn throughout that year that you can pass along to other coaches, or you can pass along to players that are listening to this podcast?
I think number one, as cliche as this might sound, it's got to be fun, top to bottom. If you're not having fun, it's hard to get up early and come to morning practice or stay late for a late practice. You gotta keep the fun. And a lot of that is, you know, like we talked about earlier, calling out the behavior while, you know, still humanizing the kid and separating the kid from the behavior, the kid from the bad habit or tendency, and just reminding yourself that fun needs to be a part of it. And not reminding the players that fun needs to be a part of it, reminding yourself as a coach, part of why I am here is, I mean, I don't know that Elaine Vigneault's behind the bench going, "Hey guys, you guys having fun?" But, you know, that for us, we need to be doing that. Number two, and this is a big one for me, whether it's in teaching or coaching or business or up to whoever the president of the United States happens to be. Talk to people who are smarter than you. Surround yourself by really smart people and listen to listen to what they have to say. I reached out. I mean, how many phone calls did you and I have? How many phone calls did I have with some coaches in their 40s, 50s, 60s who have been doing it for way longer than me and have more experience and hockey knowledge than me. And never for a second did I say, "Oh, I got it. I know all there is to know, and I can handle this without any help or any input from others." I mean, constantly reassess and reflect and just talk to people who know. I mean, you do your kind of the last thing I'll say about it. That's sort of, you know, with a smile, you know, we do a USA Hockey clinic, or, you know, coaching clinic and modules and all that every year. And I mean, at one point, you know, I thought about, I got to reach out to some of these guys, these USA Hockey guys who have been doing this for 40 years and are looking to give back and looking to share experience. You know, I mean, I remember reaching out to Coach Z at Kent State. And I met him through a USA Hockey clinic. I mean, just looking out for the coaching resources and the coaching community that we have around us.
Absolutely. I think the word that you use that most encapsulates the maximum amount of growth that you can have, whether it be a parent, player, person, coach, etc., is reflect. You know, we're constantly assessing and reflecting. You know, that's where the growth really happens. When you start thinking too fast and you're just going out doing it and going through the motions and you're not truly reflecting, you're stunting growth. And that reflection is just the most important piece out of everything. And something with USA Hockey, if you go through the modules nowadays, at the end of every single section is the word reflection. And then it's got two or three questions that you need to ask yourself and come up with answers for. That's where the growth happens. So I think that's the most important. Some people, that's journaling. Some people just like to think about it, but having that element, that time to slow down, to think, reflect, that's absolutely massive.
Yeah. It's that kind of internal fight between, ego and reflection. I mean, thinking from the perspective of, you know, I'm coaching young people, putting myself in the place of a young person. how would a young person, you know, maybe 14 or 15, reflect to what I just said or how I just explained something, or, you know, did I let my coach ego, you know, or, you know, did I, in trying to address a player's poor attitude, did I mirror a poor attitude? Those are some things that, you know, working with 13-year-olds can really get under your skin, and they know how to do it, and they seem sometimes to have fun doing it. So did I just model poor attitude in trying to address my player's poor attitude? I mean, just reflection from all angles.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for taking the time and coming on. Before we go, I'll let you have the floor for anything. Talk about anything, maybe your love for the Jackets, or heck, you can even ask me a question if you want. Turn the podcast on itself, whatever you want.
Tell me when tell me if this is the year for the Leafs. I love the Jackets. I love talking about them, but I love talking to my coach and hockey, you know, coach friends and hockey friends who are really into the Leafs. And it seems every year I get to watch them play as deep into the first round as they feel like. Is this the year?
So my philosophy on this is that you want to keep your window open as long as possible to win that cup, because a lot of it is just luck. That's one of the things with hockey. There's a lot of things that could potentially happen and go sideways on you, especially at the NHL, when you've got every player on every team can make you pay in some capacity. So I am happy with where the Leafs are. Yes, they haven't got out of the second round in a bit, but I think that they are continually growing, especially if you check out the Austin Matthews piece I did on his defensive development with the Hockey IQ newsletter. I think you can see how they're progressing. Maybe it's not as fast as people want it to be, but it's definitely happening. And you're seeing guys in their prime being surrounded by good people, and you're continually growing. And it was about time that the Leafs used their financial might to the best of their ability, and having so many great coaches and so many great managers of talent and just good quality people finally in that organization after so many years behind the salary cap. Can't spend it on the players. Might as well spend it on everything that supports those players. So I'm not going to claim that this is the year or any year is the year. I'll continue to enjoy watching them play. But I think that keeping that window open as long as possible, reinforcing the talent when you can for reasonable prices will eventually lead to good results. And obviously the cup is where we all want to be and have, but again, there's a lot of luck that goes into that. And sometimes it goes your way and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, look at Montreal. They were at the cup finals last year, and the roster's relatively the same, and it's just not going as well. I mean, yes, they lost Carey Price and Deneau, but still, you shouldn't go from Stanley Cup finalist all the way to last place team or second last place team in the NHL that quickly. So I'll put it out there. I don't know whose year it is, but a lot of good teams out there, a lot of good hockey. I like the parity of the NHL. It's fun every night. Anyone can beat anyone.
Yeah, you. I don't know who could have predicted such a rough start for the Habs. I know I sure didn't. I guess the only other thing that I would ask, and then we'll close this up here. How do you explain a whole bunch of 18, 19-year-olds in Columbus coming together like they are? Some older guys like a Boone Jenner on pace to have the best season he's ever had in his 12th year. How do you explain a team, you know, expected to be at the bottom, getting wins that they maybe shouldn't get? Where does that come from?
It's like that teacher that you don't like, and they suddenly go away and you just want to prove that, you know, it wasn't all them. It's kind of like Bill Walsh. So the older people will get this one, but maybe not the younger crowd. But he was the 49ers coach for a long time and quite the perfectionist and intense person. And won the Super Bowl, retired out on top. And I think it was the next season they ended up going back to back. And if you always hear the, you hear the interviews of the ex-players, and like, we wanted to prove that we could do it without him. That was the most motivated year of our careers. And I think that was the same for Vegas when they went through the expansion process. Hadn't happened in a while. Players know what to expect other than, you know, we don't want you as bad as you want other guys. And they took that personal. I think maybe the Seattle wasn't as dramatic as people saw the success and that, you know, this might be good for me rather than being really upset. So I think that getting out from under Torts, I think Torts developed the talent really well, allowed a few guys to blossom and maybe do it to show that they could do it without him. That would be my one theory. I have two more that go with it, but I think that would be the big one for today.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about youth hockey. There are some coaching philosophies that could be real effective at the youth level. I don't know that. I don't know how well Torts would do in Bantam.
Not so good, but he's changed. I will say that I was wrong on his hire into Columbus. I thought it was going to be a year and a half and they would be on their merry way, but he wasn't the same coach he was elsewhere. So he definitely brought the humanity with him after the last firing that he didn't have in the prior spots. He was a little more soft. Handled situations. I mean, you still got to be true to yourself, but I think the fact that he related the players more, I don't know if maybe it was his kids were getting up in that age group as well. He could truly understand and relate to the players, but he wasn't the hard person to play for where he had the Sedin brothers blocking shots in Vancouver. You know, he wasn't going to go that crazy.
Oof. Yeah, not trying to, you know, start your checking line and then go into the other team's locker room in between periods. He did get a little softer. It was fun to see that growth, and we'll see if that continues with Brad Larson in his first season. That's just fun to watch from my end. But yeah, a lot of fun, and I just want to thank you for having me on. It was good to get to talk some hockey with you.
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks for coming on. It was a lot of good stories, a lot of good life lessons along the way. So really happy you're able to come on. Thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. So before we let you go, though, we'd like to remind you to please like our podcast, subscribe to it, give us a follow, and share this with all the hockey people in your life. We really appreciate growing this community, this podcast. Remember, we also have a newsletter, the Hockey IQ newsletter as well. Really excited to continue to grow this. So please help us grow this further by liking, subscribing, following, and sharing with everyone. So appreciate you all. Take care.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch you beauts here next week for a brand new episode.